Wayne, the Supreme Court has issued a decision which basically nullifies the so-called Chevron defense that is used by regulatory agencies, so that our audience, which probably hasn't really heard of this because it's not exactly something that folks talk about around the kitchen table, what is the Chevron defense and how did it come about?
Well, basically since 1984, the Chevron doctrine has been in place. It involved a Supreme Court case, National Resources Defense Council and Chevron. And the decision at the time was made that the courts would defer to federal agencies' reasonable interpretations of statutes when there was ambiguity involved. So the courts would not interfere with an agency's decision, even if it wasn't all that great, as long as it had a reasonable basis, if the agency was making an interpretation of an ambiguous statute. And of course, there are a lot of ambiguous statutes. And the Chevron decision, as would be expected, even though we don't talk about it around the dinner table, is one of the most cited administrative law cases that there is. So it was difficult to challenge. And in the regulatory state issue that you and I have talked about so much, the context of it is, you know, agencies issue like 3,000 rules and regulations a year, but Congress passes just a few dozen laws. I mean, occasionally you'll get up to 300, but sometimes those laws are big ones, and the handoff, the delegation to agencies that Congress does always can be substantial and always can be confusing. But what the new decision does in this Loper-Bright decision, it involved a group of fisheries who, according to the Magnuson Act from the 70s, had to have a federal inspector aboard, herring fisheries, to make sure that they weren't overfishing and things like that. But what this particular case turned on was that the Fish and Wildlife Service had also required them to pay the guy. So it wasn't just that the law required the inspector, but then the agency came around and, without being able to point to anything in the statute, required payment of the inspector or monitor, as they're called. Well, the finding was for the fisheries, and this has set off a firestorm in kind of this subculture that does talk about this at dinner, in terms of, well, now if Chevron deference is overruled, that means courts will decide with respect to the question of ambiguity and whether Congress actually delegated the power or not. So Congress can still delegate power, just as it always has, but it has to be specific. The agency needs to be able to point to it. So the thinking is that this will now lead to new lawsuits that agencies will be subject to challenge on rules that are already in place. And also with respect to writing new rules, they're going to have to be a lot more circumspect and be able to point to what's in the statute. And of course, a lot of things will unfold and we don't quite know how, like what this will do to the way Congress writes laws in the future. So it's very contentious for those of us who care about regulatory reform and are looking for things to do that the court, looking for the stance that the courts should properly take in the amid other changes, like Congress potentially passing oversight for regulatory guidance, or Congress implementing a regulatory budget, or cost freezes like the one that Trump did on one in, two out. You know, those kinds of things in combination with this new Chevron overruling can be quite significant in terms of slowing down the regulatory state. So the big question now is, what might agencies do to react, and how will progressives who love the regulatory state, how will they react, and what kind of workarounds might they move toward?
Well, we do know how progressives are going to react. They're whining and moaning about this and a lot of other things these days. But when you look at this, though, Wayne, the fact that the high court is saying, okay, Congress must be more specific in writing a law, and then the laws will be adjudicated by the courts, isn't that the way things are supposed to work?
You would think so. The Constitution does say all legislative power shall reside with the Congress. And in a sense, this is exactly what should have been done. Can you imagine the effect of saying, well, Congress will make the decision, the agencies don't get to overinterpret ambiguous statutes, and that matters a lot. And if you pair it with other reforms that are in play, like the so-called RAINS Act, that would have Congress actually be required to approve a substantial or costly or controversial new regulation before it takes effect, you would essentially restore a lot of that lawmaking power to Congress. In a deeper sense, and I think this is part of what agencies will look toward and work around in coming years, is this new decision, it still does affirm the administrative state. We still have this administrative state where Congress can delegate a lot of power. And if you think about the last few years, you might be excited and happy about this decision that agencies can't overinterpret an ambiguous statute, but a lot of the problem we have in terms of growth of the regulatory state is the non-ambiguous statutes. In other words, they're completely clear in terms of the CARES Act, the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Act, the Infrastructure Law, the CHIPS and Science Act. All of these are mega regulatory before the first administrator even picks up his pen to write a new regulation. So that is one of the ways I think agencies are going to look toward workarounds. They're going to be much more careful if they have any opportunity to pass a major piece of legislation. They'll work much more closely with Congress on the legislation and make sure that there's more specifics in there for when they write their rulemaking down the line. So we need to pop the champagne. We need to enjoy this, but we need to recognize that the left is very smart. It's not going to sit still. It's going to look for ways to make statutes more hefty and clearer. And then also on the back end of things, rather than issuing rules, you and I have talked about sub-regulatory guidance documents and the agencies issuing what we've come to call regulatory dark matter. It's the bulletins, circulars, notices, administrative interpretations, all these sorts of things that can have regulatory effect. But guess what? They don't write a notice and comment rule that makes an interpretation of an ambiguous statute. They just issue an interpretation and say, oh, this is non-binding, but you're not very likely to ignore what they say. So there'll be I think there's going to be a substantial increase in sub-regulatory guidance documents as a replacement for regulations. And this is happening in the same administration that has eliminated the portals that the Trump administration had requiring the disclosure of those guidance documents. So fatter statutes with a little bit more clarity, a lot more regulatory guidance, and then bridging it all is just the simple fact that so much federal spending is regulatory in nature. So we've got a $6 trillion budget now. We've got a huge military budget with lots of regulatory add-ons put into the contracting deals that are made with military contractors. Same with Department of Transportation grants. I think a lot of the notices of funding opportunities coming out of agencies that are going to contractors and so forth are going to contain a whole lot more regulatory provisions in the contracts. But notice, see, that's not a notice and comment rule. That's just a directive, and the way they get companies to respond and file their proposals and be responsive to progressive regulatory ends. So those are the kind of workarounds. I'm grateful everybody who cares about overreaching the administrative state is grateful for this particular decision, but we do have to stay vigilant.
Well, vigilance, as Thomas Jefferson once said, is an eternal obligation. We have been talking with Wayne Cruz, who is the Fred L. Smith Fellow in Regulatory Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wayne, tell us a bit about CEI. Also, where can folks go? You've written extensively on this and other related subjects. Where can folks find that?
Fred Smith, the founder of Competitive Enterprise Institute, started our group in 1984, George Orwell's year. And so we're coming up on our big 40th anniversary. And our emphasis is the regulatory state, just as we've talked about. A lot of work being done on the budgetary issues, welfare issues, defense issues, and so forth. But we tend to focus on this regulatory state that we're talking about this week. And you can find our staff's work at CEI.org, CEI.org.
Wayne Cruz from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wayne, always good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.